Okay, I know you all want to talk and chit-chat, but we do have a county board meeting to get going.
Ready, Kathy?
Yep.
Mr. Farmer, you ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let's call this meeting of the county board to order for committee of the whole for ELEP Facilities and Justice. It's Thursday, April 7th, 2011. The time is 6:06. Roll call.
Alex.
Present.
Ammon.
Present.
Anderson.
Here.
Benzel.
Here.
Berkson.
Here.
Bett.
Here.
Carter. Coert. Holderfield.
Here.
Jane.
There.
Jay.
There.
Jones. Kurtz.
Here.
Langenheim.
Here.
McGinty.
Here.
Michaels.
Here.
Mosier.
Here.
Nudo.
Here.
O'Connor.
Here.
Petrie.
Here.
Quisenberry.
Here.
Richards.
Here.
Rosales.
Here.
Sapp.
Here.
Schrader.
Here.
Weibel.
Here. Do you have a call? Ms. Kurtz called me earlier, said she was not feeling well, could not make the meeting. Seek approval of the minutes of the committee of the whole for March 1st, 2011. Moved by Ms. Allens.
Second.
Second by Mr. James. Discussion. Mr. Connors here. No discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Seek approval of the agenda. Moved by Ms. Allens.
Second.
Second by Mr. Rosales. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. Public participation. Dr. Scott Cook.
Hello there. I rarely come to these meetings. It's been an educational opportunity for me. I live in the county between Champaign, between Sydney and Homer.
Excuse me. What is your name, sir?
Scott Cook. Okay. My interest in the two things that are on tonight, the water drainage issue and the zoning issue, are the fact that as I look at my neighbors around the county, to change the zoning laws affects things a great deal, because keep in mind, in Champaign County, there's more land that goes in the CLP every year than there is in the homes. So I have 20 acres in CLP. I live in a floodplain. I have a neighbor that bought 20 acres next to me. He's putting 15 acres of that into CLP. It's farmland now, but it's poor farmland. It's very erodible. What he's doing is taking it out of production, which is good. Okay? So this whole zoning aspect is that you have to have 35 or 40 acres to build a house in the county really doesn't make any sense. The present system, as I've seen it surrounding my neighbors, works quite well. No farmer is going to sell you 40 acres of land to build a house on at $10,000 an acre. No one moving into this county could afford that. And so the changing in the zoning policies affects people living in the county. It seems to me it's all set up to force people to live in Champaign-Urbana. I grew up on a farm. I don't want to live in Champaign-Urbana. I like chickens, horses, etc. So the zoning deals are really, in many ways, go against people living in the county, which is the wrong thing to do. On the stormwater drainage deal, there's nothing in here that says where the money goes, but it's accomplished in any way. It's another tax on top of all the other taxes that we have. There's nothing to suggest how it benefits me. I live in a floodplain that floods every spring. And so you should take those things into consideration before you increase the taxes, since agricultural taxes in the county went up 10% last year. The property taxes continue to go up, although the property values have gone down. So all your doing with these changes is creating issues that discourage people from living in the county and create a tax base that puts Illinois, in comparison to its neighbors and other places, on an unsustainable path. So I would say that, since I don't know who's Democrats and who's Republican, but I would ask, how many of you all live in the county?
I'm sorry, we do not allow any interaction between the county board and the speaker.
So I can't ask them
the word in the county board rules. You cannot do that.
Can't ask a question?
No, you cannot.
Sounds like a true democracy. You have a
vote system. The rules the county board there.
Well, the county board should change.
Are you done, sir?
I would point out that it's sort of a strange system where it's supposed to be a county board. I'm just asking who lives in the county. I can't ask that question. Obviously, it's not a democratic process.
You can see the addresses on the county board, the website.
I showed up to meeting to have some dialogue. Obviously, you don't want that.
Not allowed.
Not public
participation.
It's a great system in this country, isn't it? A true democracy that you represent, whatever you are.
Next up is Mr. Mark Thompson.
Good evening. I couldn't agree more with Scott in many ways, because I'd like to know how many of you guys read that pamphlet that I gave you the last time around that pointed out what United Nations Agenda 21 is all about, because it is your due diligence to do such a thing. I've given you all another flyer to look at, and on that front page are a series of questions, such as, exactly where did the $260,000 for the big small oil effort come from? I think that's a question you people should ask the zoning department or the regional planning commission, whoever put this together, because it's very pertinent. Because I think you're going to find out if you look at page 2 that I gave you that shows that overview. I got to put my glasses on because I can't. But the yellow part there that's highlighted, read that. It says, this is the Big Small Oil Initiative, will serve as a platform for a variety of private, nonprofit, and government initiatives. I'd sure like to know who the private and nonprofit is, and you should also pay attention to who the government entities are here as well. It also states it does not have the force of law. Is the attorney in the room here right now, the county board attorney? Can anyone answer that question?
There's no attorney here.
Okay. Well, you'll want to talk to that attorney. And refer back to that page 1. Remember when I gave you that notice, that document, that showed that the city of Champaign and the city of Urbana were signatories to the ICLEI, the International Council on Local Environmental Initiatives, which is a foreign NGO, and they were signatories to that organization. That organization makes it mandatory that you believe or work in the direction that you cannot believe in private property rights. That's a scary thing. And basically, their initiative is the Big Small Oil Initiative, and that is hidden in the guise of farmland preservation. I've exposed this to this board. You need to take me very seriously, because this is going to be the basis of the lawsuits that will follow if this is passed. It does hold a great deal of water here. So that first page, you guys need to ask each other these questions tonight at this meeting. But in the event that this board ignores what I put together for you, I think it's mandatory that you send out a mailer to every single individual in the county who owns property in the rural area that's going to be affected and notify them that this is going to be done. Personally, I think they're going to come back, revolt, and squash this like they did last time. A lot of you people are new here. This actually came down the pike a few years back, and a bunch of people showed up, and we put it down. They did not want this to happen. So the Big Small Oil came to be, a visioning process used to go around the people. That isn't right. Scott, you're absolutely right. You ought to be able to ask people questions, but if they don't know what's going on, you can't ask questions. So it's your responsibility to read what I've given you, because it states the case very clearly, and it is the truth. There's an initiative out there to get people out of the country and into the city where they can be controlled. It's called United Nations Agenda 21. And for the last minute I might have left, a number of meetings ago, Al Kurtz says to me, you know, it's really good that we can have this type of debate, and when we walk out of here, we can still be friends. Well, I got news for you, folks. This is a big deal. And if this gets passed, there's an awful lot of people who are not going to want to be friends with these progressive Democrats, because property rights are extremely important to Americans. And this is a socialist initiative, and it's nothing less than that. And if you read what I put together, you'll see that is the truth. It is not about the farmland preservation, not at all. It's about controlling people. And please ask these questions tonight.
Mr. Roger Armstrong.
Hi, my name's Roger Armstrong. I'm a resident of the county here. Can everybody hear okay? I appreciate you that you guys have to sit through some pretty difficult public testimony. I'd like to make this brief and direct here. I'm a lifelong resident of the county, a 40-year builder and developer outside in the county. I would highly recommend that you not change the zoning like it is, and I would respectfully ask that I would like to see the township public hearings where there was some public participation so that you could get some input and follow what I would consider the guidelines and laws that are already enforced in the state of Illinois to follow through on that. But secondly, I would like to also point out the inequities of what the county board's history has been with applying their own rules and regulations. 1986, when I developed a large lot subdivision within the county, I bordered on a floodplain. I paid for a lot of engineering. We spent the time. I got an approval. We wanted to expand that and add a riding stable, which required a special use permit. I was denied the special use permit. And it struck me funny that when we went for the lawsuit to reverse that ruling, the Judge Miller had a very, he said, unequal application of the laws and rules is a violation of the laws. And when he reversed that decision, we went ahead and built. You're collecting the tax money from everything that I built and established, and we don't have anybody who's homeless or floated off in the floodplains by following your restriction. But coming up, that had a cost and a time to me personally that affected my life and livelihood. And I would like to emphasize that you, by passing this, you are affecting people's lives, livelihoods, and lifestyles. Being a fifth-generation farmer, I would ask you, who are you preserving this land for? Who are you saving it for? Certainly not me. We've had surpluses all of my life in grains. So it's certainly not like we're short of it. And I would just say, can't you let the market function as it should, whereas the higher and more desirable land and the highest and best use be exploited, rather than trying to manipulate artificially and to also intercede by rules that you might not even be applying legally or judiciously. And the other part that I would respectfully ask is that the public hearings and making everyone aware in the county of this, I think, invites a judicial scrutiny if it's not done. And certainly in the past, actions, and particularly in my case, financial consequences have been a result of this. And I would respectfully ask for you to consider that when you're passing this and to say no on this item. Thank you.
Arna Levitt. Did I pronounce that right?
Yes. Hi.
Let's bring the microphone down. Pull the microphone down a little bit.
Hello. My name is Arna Levitt, and my comments refer to item C, see on your agenda tonight. My family has owned farmland in Champaign County for over 100 years, and I would hope that tonight and for the decisions in front of you now that the committee would break with tradition and listen to the opinions of its constituents and the voters and the taxpayers. And tonight's meeting I just find ironic because it's the beginning of April. Many of my farming neighbors cannot attend because they're preparing for their farming. They're out in the field right now. And so they can't even participate in this meeting that you've called for tonight. You have a... We've had more than 35 years since the zoning was first adopted in Champaign County, and for most of those years, it's interfered with my rights and my freedoms as a landowner and a resident. And I believe we have plenty of zoning laws. We should look at those, and we should use those laws that are appropriate, get rid of the laws that are not, and we should be, we meaning the committee and the farmers that live here, should be defending the rights of the residents and not restricting them. I just wanted to comment about for the people that are for this agenda, you really should go out there and buy up all our land, and then you can do whatever you want with it. But it's our land, and we have the right to choose and to decide and be a part of the process. So, thank you.
Jeff and Nicole Peck. One or both, I guess.
Good evening. My husband and I are here regarding Section B on your agenda. We are in the process of trying to purchase the Swanson home. Sorry, can you hear me? We have come up with all the finances and we've gone through all the steps in order to purchase an existing home that was built in 1977. It sits on very large acreage. We are pursuing, we're here for the approval of a one lot division of that subdivision so that we can purchase the home, our forever home for our family. We live in Champaign County now and we have found this home and it's perfect for us, and we're just here in support of the attorney of the sellers to ask you to please approve this so that we can move on with the purchase of this new home.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Jeff Tuck.
Good evening. I'm also here on item B, the Swanson subdivision. I represent the owner of the property, the Swanson Trust. A little bit of a background. This was originally a 90-acre tract. Mrs. Swanson and her husband built this single-family house on the tract about 30 years ago. Husband has since passed away. Mrs. Swanson has Alzheimer's. She's being taken care of in a facility in Arizona. The ownership of the property is now the trust. The trustee is trying to sell off a one-acre tract in order to meet the minimum zoning requirements. It's a 200-foot frontage, about 250 feet deep, as shown in the plat that we have filed. And this is an existing single-family home that's on it. I've got a series of photographs, if I can submit this as part of the record this evening, and if anybody has any question as to the fact that it's already been developed. There's a drainage swale that goes by this property that provides very good drainage. Drainage doesn't interfere with the residents. We need your your approval for the subdivision to carve out the 1 acre from the 90 acres so that the Pecks can buy the house and the trust to have assets for Mrs. Swanson. So thank you for your consideration.
Is there any other public participation?
Hi.
Oh, Mr. Sarsland.
Thank you. I'm Eric Forsland. I'm a farmer. I'm the chairman of the County Zoning Board of Appeals. And interested in the process that we're going through tonight, as I've been through all the previous process. The first time I got involved was during the RPO meetings, which were public meetings, the Rural Protection Overlay. Those were a long time ago. They were held in the gymnasium here. There was a lot of public input. The CZR, certainly, the zoning board meetings were well attended. They weren't held in the dark. They were held actually in the gymnasium here, and there was a lot of people in attendance. The big smile meetings were, by their nature, very well publicized, and all public meetings. They started with a large crowd, dwindled to a small crowd, increased to a large crowd again. They were all public meetings. The LRMP, I went to almost all of them. They were open to the public and well publicized, scheduled. Sadly, not a lot of people came. Our ZBA meetings are open to the public. I've known pretty much everyone who's been to almost all of those meetings over the past 7 or 8 years. I have not met anyone from the UN at any of those meetings. The towns, it seems like the country people, and I'm one of them, who don't want to be residents of the towns. The towns will eventually expand into all of the county if we don't have a better plan than what we have now. And I own 38.5 acres, so just, and I farm all of it and have but one house. Thank you.
Any further public participation? See none, we'll close up. Mr. Butts, did you have a...
No, I was paying your attention.
Oh, okay. All right, thank you. All right, communications. I have one. We've been sent 13 copies of the Illinois Municipal Guide. So after I step down and Mr. Chris takes over here, I will walk around. If you want one, you can have one. They contain addresses and contacts for municipalities listed by county, U.S. Congress, state agencies, state assembly members, and state senate. No maps other than a county map. Ms. Petrie.
Yes, I sent this message out to my fellow board members, but this is just a reminder that on the 13th of April at the I Hotel is an outstanding conference on green infrastructure maintenance. There's no cost, and if you're tight on time that day, I highly urge you to come to the noon lecture that will be given by Jim Patchett. Thank you.
Mr. Getty.
At your desk tonight, please note that you have two documents that are a work in progress from the Strategic Planning Committee. One is a strategic plan progress report. The other one is a multicolored thing that some of the more experienced board members will recognize from the original.
It's actually in their packets because it's for next week's meeting.
Okay.
So it's not readily, you can't see it at your desk. It's in your packet.
Okay. Thank you. The issue here is the sequence of events that's likely to happen is that we will be coming to the full board, elected officials and appointed officials like we did several years ago, to ask for input to update the list of ideas that we will address from a strategic planning perspective. Thanks to Deb for putting together some of the updated information in that multicolored 10-point plan document. On the far right are updates to what sort of progress has been made since we first came up with these concepts. And then the strategic plan progress report is more of a verbalization of the details of some of the progress made. We will certainly be looking for the full board to be involved in the work from that committee as we bring pieces to you over time. Thank you.
Other announcements or communications? Seeing none, move on to our first area, environmental land use. Mr. Kurtz?
Good evening. The agenda item 7, environment and land use. Agenda item A. This is the final recommendation to the County Board for Zoning Ordinance Amendment. It's a request to amend Champaign County Zoning Ordinance, zoning case 675-AT-10.
Move adoption.
First by Mr. Betts, second by Mr. Schroeder. Is that correct? Okay. Discussion. John, you want to say anything on this? I just want to make a comment.
I'll just let the committee know that Urbana is not going to protest this, and Champaign is not even going to take it up. So there'll be no municipal protest that I'm aware of.
This is the Wilbur Heights situation, and I'm in full support of this change.
Any other discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. B.
A subdivision recommendation to the County Board, subdivision case 196-11, a Swanson subdivision final plat approval of a one single home, subdivision for an existing home with necessary waivers.
Move.
Mr. Betts, Ms. Anderson, second discussion. Mr. Weibel.
Mr. Hall, I'm just curious, this must be pretty close to the limits of the village of Gifford. Can you tell me where it is? I can't tell on a map.
It's about 800 feet west of Gifford.
So like those three single-family dwellings that make a dog leg would be outside of the...
Yes.
Any other discussion? I'd like to let you know I personally am 100% behind this. Mr. Schroeder, sorry.
I'll direct my questions to Mr. Hall.
Please do.
John, the overhead map shows, looks like, along with Mrs. Swanson's 1 acre that we're making a decision on tonight, there's two other parcels that are out of that 90-whatever acres. And how long ago were those taken out of Mrs. Swanson's?
Those parcels were taken out prior to 1991.
Okay.
Any other discussion? As I was saying, I'm in full support of this recommendation.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
All right, let's move on. That's what's the consent agenda. Move on to agenda item C, direction to zoning administrator regarding proposed zoning ordinance text amendments. One, request to amend the Champaign County zoning ordinance to implement land resource management plan policies 4.1.5, 4.1.7, 4.1.9. Can I have a motion? Carol, second. Mr. Langenhardt.
Thank you.
Discussion?
I have a question. Well, what's the motion?
That's a good question.
Good question.
I'll ask the group.
What's that? Carol?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Use your microphone.
Okay. James, you want to make any statement on that?
Is there a motion on the floor then, or?
I'm going to make a motion for Daniel.
You need a motion from somebody.
I need a motion from the floor on this.
I'll make a motion to approve the compromise.
Which is 4.1.5.
Which one? The compromise for which acres, 35, 80?
The compromise, okay, I'll be more specific.
Please.
I'll make a motion to approve the compromise language
that has been set forth in our addendum this evening.
In this one. Okay.
On 4.1.5, on section or policy 1 or 4.1.7, and policy 1.4.9 or 4.1.9.
All right, we have a motion. I have a second to John's motion. Carol. Okay, discussion.
I guess I just need to ask what the compromise, what compromise we're making, and exactly what is this motion? What are we doing here with this?
John, you want to...
Well, my motion is what the language
okay,
is.
Okay, let Mr. Hall respond.
Well, Mr. Schroeder moved what was before you in the agenda, and that is to proceed to the Zoning Board of Appeals for a public hearing. The reason it's called the compromise is this is actually a change to your adopted policy 415. Mm-hmm. That change is to make all by right development subject to the limit on the use of best prime farmland. My recommendation is that the board, if they approve us to move ahead with this tonight, that you also make a motion for the county board in their meeting this month to approve the compromise policy 415. I think it would be a bad idea for us to move ahead working on the text amendment without the board having approved the policy that's driving that amendment. That's why it's called a compromise. Mm-hmm. In fact, the 35 acres for what we're calling the minimum farm dwelling lot size, that is actually not a compromise from what you currently have. In fact, mm-hmm. it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Did that answer your question?
Well, I just don't like any of this at all, to be real honest with you. I can't even support it. We hear tonight from people, and I've heard from many people, that don't want this to even happen. So I'm absolutely against it. I asked to find out what happened, you know, what's going on with this, and we're compromising 35 acres when I don't even have it straight in my mind if this is anything we should be doing. People don't want us to mess with their property rights, and that's exactly what this amended proposal is doing, sending it to Zoning Board of Appeals to have a hearing. So we're approving this tonight to send this on to the Zoning Board of Appeals so that they can have a hearing as to whether or not this is going to hold water. Yes or no?
You would be sending it to the Zoning Board of Appeals for a public hearing, and it would come back to you for your approval, whatever the ZBA recommends.
So we're telling people that own land in Champaign County that you will sell your land, either in a 35, is a 39-acre increment a part of it, and an 80, so is it 35, 39, and 80, or are we still at 35? Where are we at? I guess I keep getting different numbers, which is really confusing me.
In fact, the only change that this amendment is going to make to your present zoning ordinance, the only change, actually there's two important changes. Number one, it caps the amount of best prime farmland that can be proposed for rural subdivisions. It caps it at 12 acres. You yourselves have not approved a subdivision on best prime farmland greater than 10 lots in the past decade. Nonetheless, that is a change. The second change is parcels that existed on January 1, 1998 and are less than 40 acres in area, but bigger than five. Right now, they can create 3 to 4 new lots, and this would reduce that to one. They could still propose an RRO, but again, that cap on the RRO applies. If you've got more than 40 acres, the only change that this involves is you're limited in how big of an RRO you can propose.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Tom.
And could you explain to me, just again, through kind of quickly, this status of what existed in 1998 in relationship to the property?
In 1997, the 1,000 square miles of the county was zoned for 1-acre lots, and the county board had no basis on which to say, no, the flood depths there are too high, no, the roads there are too narrow, no, the soils there are too bad for septic systems. You had no zoning basis on which to control density of development in the rural area. In 1998, you changed that. That's why we use that January 1, 1998 date.
Does it grandfather anyone's development rights?
Absolutely. Every lot that was a good lot in 1998 is a good lot today.
So if someone had a right to develop that now, they wouldn't be grandfathered.
Well, I caution landowners, the only right you have to develop now is either three or four lots from what existed on January 1, 1998. Beyond that, it's a rezoning process. This doesn't change that. It does change how many lots you can do by right if you have less than 40 acres.
First, Patsy. Patsy?
Thank you. When I had conversation with Ms. Monte, some of the information that I thought would be useful for all of us to get a better handle on the implications of what we're talking about tonight is a GIS map that would show us the scattering of the properties that fall under these different acreage limitations that are mentioned, and especially in the growth zones that we know are happening, like between here in Mahama, here in St. Joe, down to Tolono. And I wonder if that is a feasible thing for us to have given to us so we have a better understanding of this. The LRMP states that we're concerned about the preservation of this farmland. And so without that kind of data, we don't know how actually effective this might be in reaching that goal, that number one goal stated in the LRMP.
Suppose somebody has 120 acres, takes all his by right development and develops it down here in the corner, and then sells off 40s of land. And, you know, this says no further RO requests or something on that land. What happens to the new people who buy this? Do they then have no RO rights or what?
That's correct.
So then do they know it when they're buying it?
If they know, if they call the zoning office, which I hope they do before they buy land, I hope they call the zoning office, we can certainly tell them that. This is a common practice. Anytime you see a land auction in Champaign County, our office is literally inundated with phone calls a few days before those auctions.
And Wendy, there were some by right development left, but maybe one or two houses on each of these 348, on all three of these 40. Does the RRO right get sold with one of them, or where did they go?
Those are all very good questions. We could, as you may recall, you directed us last month to proceed with an amendment regarding the RRO rules, and one thing that we have never done is said explicitly you can transfer RRO rights around. I think that that's a reasonable thing, and I think it would be a good thing. That's not really part of this particular amendment, but that is an issue that we're going to try to deal with in that upcoming public hearing, and hopefully you'll like what the ZBA recommends.
What this basically, in essence, is doing is it's telling landowners what they already pretty well know in Champaign County. And I think when you look at the overlay, we know what the highest and best use of farmland is and what other land is. But it prohibits how a landowner can sell their land, bottom line. And that's what this is all about. It will prohibit how they, if they should choose to sell their land and what they're going to do with it. And it's an invasion on their property rights. And I cannot support it. I will not support it. And if all of you support it, that's your business. You live with it. But I cannot support telling a landowner, you will now, by an ordinance of Champaign County, sell your land in a 35-acre plot. This is, to me, it's unreasonable, especially when I've had so many of my constituents tell me they do not want to see this happen.
Chris? I'll make a couple of general comments and then a couple of specific comments. I mean, I think one thing that we keep hearing about here is preservation of farmland, and I think the loss of farmland should be cause for serious concern, both to Champaign County economically and to the nation. Obviously, you know, agricultural production is something that we can't outsource to China. It's a source of energy that we don't have to buy from the Middle East, and I think we all understand the benefits of agriculture to Champaign County, both in the past and in the future. I am also generally supportive of zoning. I mean, I've served on plan commissions, and I think that I've seen the system work. I think zoning, you know, rather than being some governmental intrusion that we should try to avoid, actually creates property value. I mean, it's a process by which you can sell lots in a rural subdivision, and somebody can buy that lot knowing that somebody can't put a paper mill or a hog farm next door. And I think, you know, people who are concerned about property rights, even people who are very concerned about property rights, you recognize that zoning, you know, has its place in terms of allowing people to maintain their investment in the property that they're buying. So I'm okay with the concept even of something like the RRO, because I think it's appropriate to be able to look at a rural subdivision and decide, you know, are there sufficient resources available for this to be appropriate? Are the roads good enough? You know, can you get the fire trucks there? Are you building driveways in a way that's creating, you know, safety problems on the highways, that type of thing? So I think the direction the county has gone in terms of wanting to, you know, create some oversight over rural subdivisions is appropriate. I guess that being said, I think there are some fundamental requirements that a zoning ordinance needs to have. One is it has to be forward-looking. It has to be able to you know, grow in the future and accommodate changes. I'm concerned about the fact that this proposal has essentially permanent limitations on the ability to RRO property based on this 1998 benchmark map. And I think if we approve this, we're tying the hands of future county boards and ZBAs to weigh the relative merits of agricultural land use versus residential land use and other land use. Another requirement I think a zoning ordinance has to have is it has to be fair, and it's cause for concern to me when we're essentially creating a situation where the guy who gets there first, you know, has certain property rights to develop, and the guy who gets there second doesn't. And there aren't too many places in zoning ordinances where this is the case. I mean, if I want to build a fence and have to go to the zoning commission to get permission to build a fence, you know, they may or may not approve it, but my neighbor can go in and get the same thing. You know, if I can build a house, generally my neighbor can go in and ask and get approval to build a house. And so, again, I have issues with the permanence associated with this idea that we're going to go back to this 98 map, and then, you know, we're going to always sort of enshrine that as controlling how much development rights you get in the future. And finally, I guess, I think a zoning ordinance needs to be clear, you know, easily understood, clear, and free from unintended consequences. And I think sort of permanent restrictions like this are just fraught with unintended consequences. I mean, one that came immediately to mind, and I think Ms. Berkson was getting at this, is you could have, you know, 160-acre parcel. You could divide it in half now. You could divide it in half. Those new owners could divide it in half down the road, to the extent that something that was 160 acres back in 1998 may now be, you know, 4 40-acre parcels or 8 20-acre parcels. And you're going to end up with a situation where one landowner, you know, 20 years from now, goes and exercises his RRO rights, and by so doing takes development rights from the landowners of those other parcels that happen to have been carved from that original 1998 parcel. And I just don't see how practically that can be administered or that can be communicated to future potential owners of that property. I think we're tampering with the mechanism of title and property ownership in a way that would be very difficult to administer.
So I guess the bottom line is, you know, I think the notion of zoning and of, you know, trying to make sure that development happens in an orderly fashion is not, you know, something we should be shying away from. But I think there are enough problems with this ordinance that I don't think that the, I don't think we're accomplishing what we're trying to accomplish. I mean, most farmland that's being lost is not being lost to rural subdivisions. It's being lost to development in the ETJs. And addressing that problem, if they choose to do so, is really the province of the municipalities. And I think the existing ordinance provides, you know, adequate checks against unconstrained development. It allows us to look at rural subdivisions, decide whether they're safe, whether they're appropriate. And I don't think that this perceived problem of loss of farmland raises to a level that justifies interfering with property rights to the degree that's proposed here, and so I can't support it.
Just so that board members understand, your LRMP doesn't talk about preserving farmland. It talks about protecting agriculture. And protecting agriculture goes, in fact, well beyond preserving farmland. But in any case, that's what the RRO is set up to do. And I just wanted to point that out.
Mr. Schroeder, then, yes.
John? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just some comments from what we just heard. And I'll back into them. You're exactly right that the development in this county is going to be in the ETJs of Champaign, Savoy, and Urbana. Even though Champaign, Savoy leapfrog in the ETJ, and even Champaign will leapfrog outside the ETJ like they did, they're still going to develop within the ETJ. But I can point to you two subdivisions, and one of them couldn't happen today, no matter what, and it's a trailer park west of Tolono that was built over 30 years ago. And the ordinance has changed to constrain that out in the middle of the rural area, not even close to Tolono. And that Sandwell subdivision south of Philo, which is nothing but a mud hole, and we didn't have an RRO or an RPO with teeth in it. If they met just minimum requirements, they could throw together anything. That place is a mess. And I know people, one in particular, and he doesn't live there anymore, he bought a house, and he didn't know it until he bought it and moved into it, that he had the shared well down there. And that's part of the problems, you guys, especially when you go in the southeast and south part of this county. You run out of water really fast, potable water. And I know there's a farmer over by Homer that's running water for his house out of field tile. That's the only thing he can get. He can't dig anywhere to get water well. So it's a subject, it's a matter of not only of water, finding potable water somewhere, it's also a fact of going out there and you've got 14 and a half foot oil and chip roads out there and they act like they're speedways out there. I fight that all the time. I don't care if you're got something 20 foot wide or 5 foot wide, you're only moving 10 miles an hour and they'll run over the top of you. And the other thing too is, as a landowner, I understand private property rights, but I also understand too about indiscriminate development. And I also understand too, and I've mentioned this before, about a family who had a grandson who wanted to build on his grandfather a quarter mile away from his house on property his grandfather and his family's owned for generations, and he couldn't, even with the ordinance the way it's written now. And if we change too much of it, he'd need 40 acres to build there, and he couldn't afford to buy it. So we're walking a fine line here when we're putting this policy forward to get something written in the ordinance. And that's one thing I've talked about before. We started with the LMRP, and we were going to move it into the ordinance. One thing that was decidedly, I think, not unanimous, but it was a good consensus, was the people of the county needed it. We sure needed it. Something that's written so we can understand it. And I'm talking from the standpoint of policy and also from an ordinance. And the people in the county could understand it and didn't need 12 attorneys around the table and try to figure it out. And the LMRP wasn't like that. And I went to a few of them. I didn't go to every one of those commission meetings, but I went to one and when they were writing ordinance or policy like this in section 4. And I asked the question of the committee, why are you writing this like an ordinance? And one of them spoke up and said, because we don't trust you politicians. We want you to understand clearly what we need. And no one spoke up against it. So that's what we have. We've got some of this policy written like it's an ordinance. And it's not clear and it's hardly concise in some sections. Not all of it, but some of it is. Sections 8 and 9 are pretty clear and concise what the objectives are. But when you get down to 4, and I think 5 and some of 6, it's written like an ordinance and that's the way they wanted it. And that's what we have right now. So I think it's best that that's a good suggestion. We try to get this to where it's written in a way where it's not confusing, where you don't have to go. It's going to happen anyway, to where you're not looking after chapter and verse to try and find the answer for one particular solution. That's just the way ordinance is written, but I think there could have been a way we could have written it to where it had more clarity and more understanding from the standpoint of layman.
Astrid?
I wanted to address this concern that this was set in stone. Because as soon as the city comes within a mile and a half of these places, they zone it anyway. So this is really for the rural, where these things are an issue.
Al?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm persuaded by some of the comments made tonight that, in particular, Astrid and Chris's comments about, and your response to it, John, that, well, we'll get to that down the road kind of a thing. And I am not excited about putting forth these kinds of directions to ZBA without the full measure of what we're looking at. And it's disappointing that, again, here we are, we've discussed this 4 or 5 times, and it's a constant comment that it's overwritten, it's hard to understand, that there's people who are, you know, from the public, who are going to be, you know, like Astrid said, you know, you take your chance if you're second in line to find out whether you can do something that you thought you could. And, you know, it's hard for the county, any governmental body, to reach out in a consistent way to explain how things work. It's incumbent upon the landowner to do that. But this borders on confusing to everybody. And I think we need to step back and take a look at what's the right way to go about this and not to jump on this thing. I just think you've got private property rights and you've got the issue of zoning, which is very important, but it's just too confusing to a lot of people. And here we are again discussing something that half the people are saying, starting out the conversation with, could somebody explain this to me?
Steve?
You know, I've been here for 18 and a half years, and 15 years of it's been about zoning. We've had 2 rewrites of zoning ordinance. They both failed. There's always a protest that requires 21 people on this board to vote for it, and you can't get 21 people on this board to agree on anything. The one thing I like in this, John, is taking those 3-acre lots and making people able to use one instead of 3. Because the way that ordinance is written right now, on 40 acres, you can sell 3, but they got to be 3-acre lots. And you can have one for yourself. But those 3-acre lots are a half a quarter of a mile long and 200 feet wide. That's what you got to do if you got 40 acres, and that's 660 feet long with 200 feet of frontage. Well, you want to sell three of those and keep three for yourself, you got 28 acres left. If we could get down to 1 acre lots, and if you wanted to sell three and keep one yourself, you'd have 36 left. And this is the thing that's in there that makes sense to me, because I farm around two of those 3 acre lots on Windsor Road, and I farm half of each one of them for the people that own it, because they don't want to mow the grass. They wanted an acre, and they wanted to build a house on it, and that's big enough for a septic system, and that's big enough for a well. And if we didn't get anything else done out of this, that's the one recommendation I'd like to see go to the ZBA. Because I'd rather have three houses on 1 acre than I would one on 3 acres, with that havoc it plays with farming against it or around it, and it just opens the floodgates. I've got 80 acres next to Arrow Place, and I fought that thing to the death. And that was before we had any subdivisions, water management. There was no consideration of what that was going to do to the township road. It was outside the mile and a half. And when you get in the mile and a half, you can almost bet it's not Champaign, Urbana, and Savoy. St. Joe's done it twice on two big subdivisions, north and south of town, because they didn't want the responsibility of maintaining streets down the road and the township. One of them was in Stanton and one of them was in St. Joe. And the St. Joe Road Commissioner refused to plow the streets if they put it in. And he has the right now to say, I don't want that thing, and he can stop it. The other concern you got's drainage. And when you get one of these 3 acre lots and there's no record of how much tile's in this ground, I've got farm after farm where I want to put tile in. I don't know what's there. I know what I need. There might be something I could hook up to drain a pond. But if I haven't got a ditch for an outlet, I can't do anything with it. And that was the case with Arrow Place. We had an owner on the north side that had 100 acres with his main outlet, had to run through that subdivision. They had to relay it, and then the thing broke down on my side, and we had to relay it to the ditch. And it got to be a grievance process of who was going to pay the bill. But I think those are things you got to look at. I would 10 times sooner have 1 acre lots than three. I don't think that's gaining you anything. You're losing a lot of farmland, and you're getting people with land they don't want unless they got a horse or some other livelihood that they're pursuing out there that require that. So I'm in agreement with what Al said. I am concerned about the lot size. I'm not concerned so much about how many of them. I'm perfectly happy with what we've got now, and I would go back to what John said about Phillips and that subdivision south of Philo. Before we had that RRO, we got a call a week in here because I got water in my basement, or my yard's flooded, or my septic system doesn't work, or I didn't get any water. And that led to an ordinance that I got through here when I was chairman. And I mean, that's a tough thing to do, whether it was 13 years ago or now. But we've stopped a lot of that big stuff out in the county. And when you start looking at, I've got a 3 acre lot sitting there next to semi-owned. The lady paid $60,000 for it 5 years ago. and she still wants $60,000, and I offered her $30,000 for it just to get rid of it, and she said, I'll never sell it for that. Well, never's a long time, because farmland is $10,000 an acre out here east of Urbana, and the city of Urbana is not kind to anybody that's in the mile and a half. And when you look at what's in this county that's in the mile and a half of somebody, there isn't a whole lot of it left.
John?
Well, very quickly, we're about to beat a good horse to death here tonight, but I was kind of pleased when one of the speakers tonight in public participation reminded us all that the land use management plan was a go-around because they could not get it through the public hearing process as they originally thought they intended to. I attended most of the original hearings on the rewrites, and the people were... The great majority of the people were opposed to it, and that's why it didn't work. So we went around them with this land use plan. Now that's where we're at today. Having said that, the people pleaded in all of those hearings, even prior to that, the rewrites, make it simple. I don't know how many times I've looked old John Wright in the eyes and said, John, do it, but do it simply. Make it so we can understand it. I don't want 4.7.3.6.9, refer to 7.3.2. I don't want all that garbage. Just give it to us in plain language so we can understand it. And that's not what we have before us. And until we get it, you're probably not going to get what you need. Thank you. Patsy.
Thank you. I'm so glad to hear others say what I said several meetings ago, that the document is just too confusing. And as I was reading it, one of the demarcations is 1998, and I was trying to figure out this afternoon what to say tonight. If this got rewritten, not I'm saying taking things apart, but how it's structured, which would make it much less confusing if the focus was on the demarcation dates and when people can do what and when people can do not, and a lot of the things that Ms. Berkson and Mr. Alex pointed out would fall out. The second thing is, how much of what is in this document has been checked against the available acreage out there? I think Ms. Monty, well, before I was on the board, created some chart that showed some of it, but again, I'm back to my request previously, and that is
without the documentation, so we
can better understand how this will play out on the acreage within the county. We're making a decision blind, basically, and that is, that's poor decision making.
Roll call, please. Roll call.
Any further discussion? Steve?
We really never have had a good definition of what best prime farmland is. And
he's right.
Man from Homer that's down there along the Salt Fork and the floodplain does not have best prime farmland. We never did sit down and say, Drummer Flanagan, Rob, Bent Brenton, I can name them all if I had a good memory anymore, but those are Class A soils. And you got Zena and Sabina down there where he is along the river in a CR district that's Class 3. And there's a whole lot of Class B in the north end around Rantoul and east up on the ridge that is Class 3. And I've never understood why we called stuff in the CR, which is along the Sangamon and the Salt Fork and the Ambrose, Class 1 land. Or why we had the restrictions on those people that we've got on Class A soil. And that's never been delineated in this ordinance, and it's never been considered in a zoning case that I know of, because it's by our definition, all best, and it's not all best. I think you need to look at that before you go racing off with something else to throw to the ZBA that's going to come back here and get thrown out because somebody's going to protest it. And I know Mr. Barnhart doesn't agree with the word I say, but I'm going to say it anyway. And those are things that could have been made simple that aren't in this ordinance.
Do you have any further discussion? Roll call, please.
Alex.
No.
Ammons.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Benzel.
No.
Berkson.
Yes.
Betts.
Yes.
Holderfield.
No.
James.
No.
Jay.
No.
Kurtz.
Yes.
Langenheim.
Yes.
McGinty.
No.
Michaels.
No.
Mosier.
No.
Nudo.
No.
O'Connor.
Absolutely not.
Petrie.
No.
Quisenberry.
No.
Richards.
Yes.
Rosales.
No.
Sapp.
No.
Schrader.
Yes.
Weibel.
Yes.
Motion fails. Okay. 7D. This is a pending legislation in the state. Request for a letter of support for Senate Bill 2195/HB 3372, County Stormwater Bill. Mr. Langenheim, move. Second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Quisenberry. Discussion? Ms. Hollifin.
I do have some concern regarding this bill, and so I contacted Jason Bergman, who's with the House of Representatives, you probably all know. What he told me was, of course, he doesn't support it, and it's also going to be the sponsor of this actual bill is actually amending it and rewriting some of the actual bill. So I will not support the way it's written at this current time.
Any further discussion? Mr. Nudo. Okay, we'll get going.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm in the same boat as this with this particular. I'm confused. When I first read this, it says at the front here, letter of support, but in requested action, it says nothing about an action to support it. In fact, it says in the body of the background, it seems unlikely that Champaign County would undergo this process anytime soon. And so I'm wondering why we want to support something to add another tax in the county to discourage further business or anything else that could possibly grow out there. It boggles my mind. I know in Rantoul we have this stormwater, and it is onerous, believe me. And nothing is from that tax is being used for improving stormwater that I'm aware of. In fact, they're talking about another tax for that. So I can't support this. Why would I want to do a letter of support for another tax out in the county? Ms. Petrie.
This is a procedural question, if the chair could respond, and that is, isn't it a little bit premature to do a letter of support until a bill is in the final draft?
We can do it any time we want to.
Other discussion?
We don't know when bills are going to change either. So,
I'm sorry, what was that?
We cannot predict what they're going to do in Springfield.
John, did you raise your hand?
No.
No? Stan?
Well, I guess I would ask the chair, why was he requesting support of this matter?
Actually,
Mr. Weibel, can you respond to that?
I have not made a statement about that. It was brought to my attention. I said it was put on the agenda. I have not voiced an opinion about it. Has anybody heard me voice an opinion about it?
Well, but if you're asking for a letter of support, that means that you put it on the agenda because you were looking for support.
No.
Unless I probably don't know what you're trying to
tell me. You're saying that everything I put on the agenda I support.
Oh, not that this time. No, sir.
No. What it is that it turns out that the way we show up, the board support or not is to have the chair write a letter of support or not. Perhaps you've read a letter not supporting it. That is the process on which the county board voices its opinion, the body, to the chair.
Did you write the land use plan?
Ask him.
Well, since the letter is from Mr. Hall.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Since the letter is from Mr. Hall, perhaps he could explain to us why we're being asked for support.
I was asked to put it on the agenda, and in fact, the way it was put on the agenda was for a letter of support. I think that makes sense. If you don't want to support it, you would not pass this resolution, and that would be the end of it.
Any further comment? Mr. Rosado.
Could we move to put it on hold until the legislation is written? I would move to see the final draft before we move on supporting it either way.
Second.
Okay, we have a substitute motion.
Point of order.
Sir.
You're making a motion which is dependent upon something which has no definite time. That is not a very good motion. Because you don't know when they're going to act on it.
President Barry?
You have to rule on the point of order.
Okay. Obviously, then... What's that? Use my mic. Sorry. Thank you. I was just sort of sitting back and surveying the territory.
It's out of order, then, I would assume, at this point. Mr. Quisenberry.
I'd like to make a motion that we table this to the next committee of the whole, please.
Okay. We have a motion to table.
Second.
I have a second from Mr. McGinty. Any discussion on the tabling? Carol.
I don't think we should actually table it to the next committee of the whole because, one, it's an issue that we really don't know what it's going to actually be. And, two, I'm not clear on, I know we talk about stormwater management for the property, but the infrastructure repairs in the larger portion of the county, I don't know who actually covers that or who repairs that as it was described. Flooding and all of that kind of stuff. Who actually pays for that? And I guess that's where my question would be before I would even table or support this letter. I don't know exactly who's going to pay for the
Mr. Richards.
I have a separate question. Do we have any reason to believe that this legislation is not in its final condition? The deadline for passing legislation, I can't speak for the Illinois Senate, but the Illinois House of Representatives was the last day of March. Do we have any reason to believe that this is exempted from that?
According to the information that I had from Jason Berkman, Representative Berkman, he said that the sponsor of this bill is amending it. So it is not in its final draft, and they're still working on it. So I don't think it came out of the House. It may have, because, of course, it does have a Senate bill but it's not done. It's not completed. I think the Senate may have sent it back to the House and asked for revisions.
Mr. Richards.
Ms. Holderfield, are you saying the bill is still in shell bill form, or it just hasn't had its final amendment?
I don't have that specific information other than the sponsor is amending this House bill.
Jan?
Well, when I read down through this, it struck me that in supporting it, it was supporting the idea that it would give counties a way to assess a fee if they had a need for that. But the Section 5 says that it authorizes.
I want to ask for a point of order at this point. There's a motion on the floor whether we should
table
this.
Well, she's
decide whether we're tabling it to the next meeting.
Okay. Patsy, did you have your hand up? Who else? For any further discussion on this, the table.
Because you can't discuss it.
Because that's what...
We only discuss a motion to defer. The motion to table is not subject to discussion. But that's
thank you.
Get into that.
All right, so that we take a vote on tabling. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. All right.
D2. Okay, we're ready for this one. Now we're in opposition, folks.
Okay. Letter of opposition to House Bill, and this one I'm supporting. Letter of opposition to House Bill 1626, establishing protest rights for county board special use permits. And who would make a motion?
I'll move it.
Mr. Betts?
Second.
Ms. Harfield? Okay, discussion, Carol.
I am not in support of this one. On the bottom of the background request information, it says that, and let me just clarify, that this will disallow individuals from protesting the county board under Ag 1 zoning district for wind farms. So if someone, I remember this whole discussion when we did the wind farm ordinance, this would disallow an individual from protesting their neighbor putting a wind tower up.
I'd like, John, would you just give them the list? There's more than just one item on here that would cause quite a bit of consternation at the ZBA.
The bill is to actually allow protests.
Yes, to allow a single person.
Right now, there are no protest rights. This would allow protest rights, and that's why I've suggested that it's really going to be detrimental to county zoning.
Any other discussion? Guys?
Mr. Hall, I just noticed that in this case you're asking for a resolution. Is there any particular reason? Do we have time for a resolution? The reason we ask for a lot of support is that those can be put out the next day. Obviously, this resolution will have to wait until the regular county board meeting. Does that fit in with the timetable as far as the bill's progress, as far as you know?
As far as I know, the end of April wouldn't be detrimental, but either way, I just wanted the county board to be aware of this, because if it passes, your zoning ordinance is going to be greatly affected.
Any further discussion? Steve.
Just summarize it for me, if you could, please, John. Does this actually say that in Champaign County, with this being passed, it will be more difficult to build a grain elevator or farm chemical facility on ag zoning?
It will be more difficult unless you change your zoning ordinance.
Wow.
Yeah, wow is right.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Motion carried. Okay.
Two consent agendas, A and B.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have two. What's that?
Is this the last one also consent?
All right.
What's that?
Yes, it was. Okay, we have three on the consent agenda, 7A and B, and D2. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Under other business, can I ask a question?
Sure.
I guess the question I have, since we've defeated the items in C.
What are we going to do with it?
Where to from here?
Yeah.
John?
That's what I was asking. I was asking John the same thing.
I don't know. Where do we go from here?
I get my direction from the county board.
Yeah. I thought, Mr. Chairman, may I address
that? Please.
I thought there were valid questions that were raised during the discussion this evening. I don't believe it was the intent of Mr. Alex or Mr. Quisenberry or others to actually kill, and I don't want to speak for him, kill the whole thing. I think they wanted some fine-tuning and some changes. But right now we're at a situation where it's simply dead. I don't think it should be just dead, because what I was hearing is people wanted some changes and more information, not dead. But I don't want to speak for those folks.
Chris,
I don't know if this is in order, but I'd like to respond to Mr. Bess's comment.
I would rather see the whole thing killed than end up with something along the lines of what was proposed. I mean, that's not saying I wouldn't be supportive of something different, but I think there's only so much polishing that we can do to this particular object.
Patsy?
Well, let's see if we can salvage the situation. Two things come to mind. One is a committee to work with Mr. Hall on rectifying and simplifying and clarifying the document, which then could be brought back to a committee of the whole through ELOC. Or else that we have a study session so we can really get down and grind down on the situation of the document.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. We voted that down. It's down. If it needs to be brought back, we've got a way to do that.
Okay. That's it. So you're locked.
Call this meeting of the facilities section of the Committee of the Whole together this evening. Mr. Wren is here for presentation regarding his report. If you would begin.
Thank you. On pages 77 through 80, we've added a couple of new reports just for your information. 80. Are there any questions?
Mr. Weibel.
One question, Alan, and you probably cannot answer now, but a year or two ago we made the effort to try to reduce our electrical use by, I think, something per square foot. I forgot exactly what it was. Does that recall what it was? A dollar a square foot or something like that? Or
50 cents a square foot.
That's what, yeah. Do you know, obviously, price electricity has changed somewhat, but do you know, have you a chance to take a look at the figure to see if we're approaching that, or have we had any success?
I have not checked it, but I will be doing that soon. I do that in preparation for our upcoming budget work, and I'll have that report in a month or two.
All right,
we get into that.
I entertain a motion to receive and place on file.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Jay, seconded by Mr. James. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries.
The next item is a Brookings Energy Lighting Retrofit Project Update, and pages 81 through 84 are just a sample of January billing. We've worked through pod 100, 200. We are currently working in 300 and prepping for pricing for replacement of gym lights and stuff, pod 400. We are starting to bill for reimbursements of the grant funding monthly, and it seems to be moving on. We are going to be finished with the energy grant May 15th is the completion date. We have another year to finish with our community block grant, so we'll continue to work in this building to remove these T12s, replace them with energy efficient T8s, get rid of the metal halides and LED exit lights and so forth.
Questions, Patsy?
Just a clarification question. The grants that you are doing this project under, is that sufficient funding to cover all of the costs you're experiencing to do the retrofitting?
No, it is not.
What's the cost to the county, do you project?
We are, with the combination of the two grants, if we're able to get enough work done to be reimbursed for everything we've been promised, the grants have paid for, or will potentially pay up to 80% of our actual cost.
Okay, but But then what will the 20% cost be to the county? Approximately.
Well, we're hoping to... that 20% cost, the dollar amount... Oh, okay. I cannot accurately say that. It's going to be approximately $10,000 to $15,000.
Other questions? I'd ask that entertain a motion to receive and place on file that report.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Rosales, second by Ms. Ammons. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. The Elias Roof Project.
The roof is complete. We have all shingles, all roofing area on the 1971 edition now, completely repaired. It has been inspected, and we are waiting for the contractors to finish the punch list so we can make final and close that project out. They've worked a lot back through this winter in January and February when the weather was, we had a couple good weeks at a time, and they got a lot done. So I'm real happy with the progress they have done.
Okay. Questions? Great. Our Bechtel update.
So as you can see, if you drive by today, like they have been working on the exterior of the building. Almost all of the exterior concrete on the south side of the building is complete. We are being held up just a little bit by the utilities companies. They don't seem to want to come to our site and keep us moving, so we're waiting on them to finish burying the gas line and the electric lines feeding the building and hooking up the water so that we can... We've got all of the rough ends completed inside. The office areas now are being finished painted. Ceiling grid and ceiling tile are being put in. All framing is completed. So with a little break from the weather, and if the utility companies show up and get the work completed, they should be looking at finishing really close to the 22nd of this month.
Questions? None. The budget. The budget report on 85.
The page 85.
On page 8, Deb, would you like to comment?
This is the project budget report, and as you can see, we are on target with the budget for this project at this point in time. This just shows what's been paid to date and where we are yet remaining.
Moved by Mr. McGinty, seconded by Mr. Sapp, to receive and place on file. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. Updating on the RFQ for 2011-005, either Deb or Mr. Reinhart.
We did receive five responses to the RFQ. The individual members of the evaluation team have completed their evaluations. We will be meeting tomorrow to determine the short list for interviews. Interviews will be conducted next Thursday or Friday with the shortlisted firms, and we will bring a recommendation to the county board to proceed with negotiations based on the ranking of the committee after we've interviewed the shortlisted firms.
Thank you. And for the record, I have asked Mr. Sapp, the vice chair of this committee, if he would stand in my stead next Thursday and Friday for those interviews, because I cannot be at those interviews. And I assume there is no objection from the board. If there is, speak now. Okay. And... request from the coroner for changes to the facility. Maybe, Alan, you could briefly explain it, and then for people who want questions, we can have the coroner come up and answer them.
Point of parliamentary inquiry, Mr. Chair. Is there action being requested on the part of the county board or on the part of the committee here tonight? Are you seeking action on the part of the committee, or
yes,
is this just for information?
We will be seeking action.
Okay, that wasn't clear from the agenda item. I apologize.
if you could swear.
Part of the problem we've had now is that one issue I have noticed, when we had our pre-construction meeting with the users of this building, with our general contractors, one of the requests by the coroner's office was to add a commercial style exhaust fan in the prep room in the building. And he made a walkthrough in his area and noticed about a week or so ago that it was not installed yet. So we checked with the general contractor and they said yes, it was requested and they will get it installed. When I found the specs, when I received the specs of the equipment they were proposing to put in, I realized that this was nothing more than an exhaust type fan for a bathroom, 5 foot by 7 foot. They are expelling, pushing in 500 CFM cubic feet per minute into this particular room, and this exhaust fan is only taking out 75. So therefore, the air in this room is going to move out into the corridor in the coroner's office and down the hallway and into the offices. But after talking with Duane, we found out that they will have very, very, as he called it, decomposing bodies in this room from time to time. So that's not going to work for that part of the building. So I brought that attention to everyone, and here we are discussing a upgrade to the exhaust fan.
Questions, Mr. White?
Yeah, I'm just looking at the diagram on page 88. We've got, it says, need adequate ventilation here in two rooms. Are you saying we need two fans, or does the one larger fan accommodate both rooms?
That would be one larger fan to accommodate both rooms.
Okay, which room would the fan actually be in, the cool room or the prep room?
That would actually be on the roof, not in either room,
okay.
And it would be ducted
okay.
to each individual room.
Thank you.
Geraldo Rizales.
Has there been a problem with smell or odors in the past?
I can't answer that. If Mr. Corner,
yes, there has, actually, in our current facility now and before when we're here. And it's not just the decedents that we have a problem with. It's, and not only people who have been deceased for a while before they were found, it's also fire victims. And so their property, their clothing and stuff like that has a very strong odor and smell to it. When we bring it into the office and when we store it in our evidence room or in that other room or process it, whatever we're doing with it, that smell leaks over into the main office area, which we deal with it for the most part. But when the families come in, you know, they don't realize what it is, but it's very unpleasant for them. And if they were, under most circumstances, if they realized what it was, especially if it was a recent death for them, that's when it causes a problem as well.
How long has the current system been in operation?
The fan? Or
yeah, the ventilation system?
We don't actually have a ventilation system currently. We don't. This is on the new building. In the current building we have, there's no ventilation system at all.
Mr. Richards.
This sounds like a great idea. So great, it makes me wonder why we didn't just do this on the original plans. I don't know.
We're here because the wrong size exhaust system was sized for this room. There was an exhaust fan designed with the room, but it was recently determined that that system is not large enough to accommodate the coroner's needs. And those needs were not made terribly clear that there were going to be, bodies in this room. So that's why the system was undersized in terms of the exhaust fan. And I think maybe at this point the coroner should speak to what he has a request to expand the use of this room in this new facility, which also plays into the need for the larger exhaust system. And maybe he should explain that now for moving this forward.
Sure. There's a second. We had a second request come up because, as Alan stated, the times I've been in the building while it's being constructed and walked through and looked at it, it came to my attention and realized that the only thing we're lacking in this building is the ability to do our autopsies, because we still have to process the bodies and so forth. And I
left a handout on your desk this evening titled at the top, Breakdown of Costs Associated with Transporting Champaign County Cases to McLean County. And I've laid out the fees and everything that we pay. And what I wanted to stress, the second, third page of that, I took some statutes from the corner statute and printed them and put them in there. Just to give you an idea, it's not just about autopsies, because we deal with bodies on a daily basis, and they're not all autopsy, but we still have to photograph them, examine them, fingerprint them. We draw blood and urine ourselves and fluids and send those in. Not every case gets autopsied. And if I had to do that somewhere else, I have to pay the fee to do that somewhere else anyway. So in addition to that, like I said, when I looked at this plan, I said the only thing that we can't do in this building currently when it's finished is do autopsies. And the reason that is we didn't purchase an autopsy sink and have it installed in the one room, one of these rooms that's going to have the ventilation fan. The plumbing was installed in there for a regular sink, but nothing for a, and that was our request, because we needed a sink somewhere in there. But as I looked at it, I said, you know, we've got the autopsy table. If we had the autopsy sink, we can do autopsies. There's nothing we couldn't do in this building. So I talked to Alan, talked to Rossler Construction about that and said, would it be possible? I researched the sink to find out what the cost would be, and I've got that in this as well. The one difference is this: it's a stainless steel sink. It's made specifically for autopsies. It has certain controls on it and everything. It's like 9 feet long. It sits on a stand in the wall. We could have it installed. The one change that had to be done is the plumbing lines that came into the building were half inch. They're 3/4 in the ceiling, but they changed to half inch coming down. The specifications for the sink ask or request that a 3/4 inch line be sent to the cold supply, because there are multiple uses for the cold supply on the sink. So that would require us changing that one section of the half-inch line to 3/4 and able to hook this sink up. So I put that in there saying that we could save the money that we spend going to McLean County for all our autopsies. If you look at that sheet, in the first column, the first number you see, or the second column to the right, and you see a 277.5, that's the fee I pay Bloomington for every autopsy that I do. When I take a body to Bloomington to do an autopsy, I pay the coroner's office there $277.50 just to use their facility. So if you look at that, I had put in the first number, two columns further to the right, that's 140 autopsies. That's a very busy year for us. Just below that, I put in 122. That's our four-year average currently. And I've estimated we'll do around 125 this year. Now, that's not a 100%, because I never know what's going to happen, but going by our current numbers, we'll probably come in at 125. So if you see the far right column, those are the totals that I pay Bloomington for those autopsies. So skipping down, I also added in the cost of gas mileage for us driving over there, and I did that at $3.69 a gallon with our vans that get approximately 12.5 miles to the gallon, because they're large vans for hauling people. Well, that was a conservative estimate now, apparently, after the last few days. But I added that fee in, and then there's some fee depending on which one of my employees goes, because it's an hour trip over, an hour back, that they could be doing something else. And sometimes I have to call in another employee to go over, because we're short staffed versus having these done in our facility. I wouldn't need to send somebody anywhere. So I put those numbers in there. The other thing I didn't factor in as well is the mileage and the wear and tear on the vehicles. And so I put those numbers in just to show you that at 120 miles round trip per case, the far right hand column shows you how many miles annually we travel just in going to Bloomington. So at the bottom of the page, I put in equipment needed to perform the autopsies in Champaign County. I have called, I got the price, even with a discount. The sink itself costs almost $16,906. Alan was able to get an estimate from the contractor to install the sink and redo the plumbing the way it needs to be, was the $1,738, and then the exhaust fan cost is the $3,657. And if you flip over to the back side of that page, that totals $22,301. Now the question I put in there, if you see on the left hand side, show me the money, because that's always a big question I figured. So I looked at my budget. I've done 35 autopsies this year so far. at that $277.5 per case, I've spent almost $10,000. I have $24,000, almost $25,000 left to spend that I would be paying Bloomington for the rest of my autopsies. So depending on how soon, if this is approved, that it could be done, I actually have the money in my budget currently. It would probably, I assume, require some sort of budget amendment to put it into the capital equipment fund to purchase, but it actually would not cost the county any more money out of the general corp fund. And we would actually, after this year, I could be saving upwards of somewhere between $30,000 to $38,000 by not paying a fee to Bloomington.
Mr. Staff, you had your hand up first.
Well, I was just going to comment on Mr. Richardson's question about the exhaust fan as well. Again, I think it's important to understand that this new facility, there was an exhaust fan requested. I have the bigger problem that I think it was, regardless of what was going to be in there, if you're going to exhaust a room that's getting 500 cubic feet a minute of airflow, you cannot exhaust a room with only 75. I think it was just a poor design. So that's why this additional $3,600. There was some discussion. I just think it's got to be exhausted for the amount of air that's coming in. So.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Yeah, I have two questions. One is, are the charges for changes included in these numbers? If it's a, does will the contractor have an additional charge for the change?
I believe all charges are included in the numbers you have seen there.
Okay, and then my second question, for this to be a good analysis, I would assume that the forensic specialist that is interested in coming here to perform autopsies would have additional costs associated with coming here?
Actually, not at this time. The pathologist I use now in Bloomington actually travels to Peoria as well, and there's no additional cost charge to them. He charges them the same fee that he charges me when I come to Bloomington, and he has expressed that he will come here if we have this facility. They can do it, and I would just pay the fee that he automatically charges already.
Okay. Patsy, then Mr. Alex.
Well, I understand all the arguments. I understand that you feel there's money to cover this new equipment. What I do not understand is, I was sitting over there as all the conversation went on about design build, this is it, no coming back, this is the best way to do it. The arguments went on and on. I'm assuming that the people who designed this talked to everybody. How in the world could such an egregious underdesign happen? And what can we learn from this so the next time we have a facility project, we're not going through the same thing?
I stood here when we approved the building originally, and the comment I gave to the board at that time, and I remember it directly, was, I can do everything in this facility when it's completed except for autopsies. And I said that at that time, but it wasn't in the planning when the building was originally planned. It wasn't authorized to do that. And like I said, when I've been walking through the building and looking at it and looking at the way it's set up, because we set it up the way for our uses, it seemed silly to me that we wouldn't try and do this to do everything we can. But I did. That was the one comment I made way back when it got approved the first time.
Thank you.
Mr. Alex?
From a timing standpoint, would it be appropriate to move this such that it can be, a budget amendment can be placed on the upcoming finance cow agenda, and that this action itself could be taken at the full, so action on both authorizing the change request and approving the budget amendment could be taken at the full board meeting?
Yes, actually the project budget, we have the ability to pay for the change order for the sink installation cost and the exhaust fan out of the existing project budget without having to amend it. The only thing that is at issue is the sink, and whether or not we have not yet determined with the auditor's office whether the auditor will allow the sink to be purchased directly out of the coroner's general corporate budget, or if we have to transfer the money from the general corporate budget to the facility, the construction budget.
That could be done in May, and we could still proceed with this immediately.
So is the action that's being sought to move this to the full board meeting, directing the administrator to approve the change request?
Actually, what we're asking for here is, and change orders, Alan, help me if I get this wrong. Change orders have historically, the authority rested with the administrator to approve change orders if they could be done within the project budget. We did not ask for that authority because this was a different style of project, because this was a design-build project and we didn't anticipate change orders. But if you could give approval tonight to for us to go ahead with this, to execute this change order, then we could do it tomorrow, which would probably be better for the overall time frame of this project to keep it moving forward. And it is within budget, so you're not changing the budget for the project by approving these.
In that case, I would move that we authorize the administrator to authorize this change order.
Second.
Second by Mr. Gonzalez. Ms. Emmons.
I just had a question about, and I appreciate Mr. Quisenberry's question on this issue. I don't understand what the purpose of the whole piece is in how much money is going to budget that we currently have. That's the first.
The sink is not. He is going to pay for the sink, which is the biggest piece of the dollars that you're approving here.
Wouldn't the whole thing be paid out of the coroner's budget ultimately?
The building?
No, not the building. I'm sorry. The exhaust fan and the sink.
No.
Is that what we're talking about?
No.
Just the sink.
And quite frankly, the sink is also probably going to have to be paid for out of the construction budget because it has to be capitalized with the building. But what the coroner is saying is that he has the money to pay for the sink.
And so would that be an internal transfer?
It would be a transfer.
All right.
It would be a board-approved transfer.
It would be a transfer.
Right.
The... I had one question though for Dwayne that mentioned the gentleman who would still come here mm-hmm. to our facility to do the service. Would that be equal to what we pay when they go to when you?
Currently, yes.
In essence, there wouldn't necessarily be savings except that we won't be driving out there.
My savings will be the fee, the $277 for each autopsy. After I start doing them here, I no longer pay that fee. That's not my pathologist fee. His fee is $800. So it's that's totally separate. This is only the morgue fee that I pay.
Mr. James.
We're following up on Patsy's, I think she was more or less, and I hope I'm right, was alluding to the fan. If this was a design and build, I would assume that people looking at that, you know, would know that that was this type of operation and that that would be something to consider. A bathroom vent fan, well, I hope every bathroom's got a vent fan with what goes on in there. But what I'm upset about when we're getting ready to approve this, I see that Rossler, the general contractor, has asked for a 10% markup, which historically I've always said when we have add-ons or anything else that comes up, if it's somewhat their mistake, they still shouldn't be making, and I don't know, he could probably put that number somewhere else, but it just upsets me every time I see that someone's going to make 10% for a mistake they made, and we're going to give it to them gladly. It's peanuts in the scheme of things, but if I was the person doing the job, I'd probably turn around and say, you know, I'm making enough money here. I should have done this correctly. I want the county to rehire me, so I'm going to do the right thing. That's just my comment on it. I'm all in favor of this, and I'm in favor of the autopsy room because I think in the long run it's going to be a benefit. I think it'll save us money. I think that in time it will probably save us a lot more than any of us are sitting here even thinking about at this point. I think Dwayne does an excellent job over there, and I hope all this flies through, but we need to twist this guy's arm a little bit on this markup.
Mr. Jay.
Well, I assume we're doing this all at once, the fan and the sink. We're not separating the two. Is that the motion?
That's the motion I made.
Okay. Well, and my only concern was I can support the fan. I've got reservations about going into the autopsy business. Dwayne's talked to us about it before. I wasn't in caucus and didn't get the lowdown, and I've tried to do the best I could since then. But always before, when we got down to the push and shove, there really wasn't a lot of cost savings for us trying to do a morgue here ourselves as opposed to you going to Bloomington. And I'm not sure
I've got to assume that these are fairly accurate and there will be some savings, but I'm not sure of that. The other thing we don't know about is the reason they're not more morgues is because they're not profitable. Most morgues are not cost effective, and there's a reason for that. And I don't know that the condition that this county's in at this point, that we need to be taking on another responsibility. Thank you.
Mr. Nudo.
I'm going to have to recuse myself on this question because I have a relationship with the contractor. People are dying to get in there.
If I could, I would just like to make one more comment. And I've said this before, we are in the autopsy business. I am in the autopsy business. That's what I do. And morgues aren't meant to make money. If they were, there would be a lot more people having their own morgues. And there are a couple private morgues, and they're very expensive to get autopsies done there. But, they're not meant to be. My responsibility is to do autopsies and find out why people died and make sure there was no, unusual circumstances or what goes on. So, it's not intended to be a money maker. And, in fact, I'm not claiming it's going to make money. The only claim I make by these numbers, and these numbers are accurate, I went back and refigured them to make sure, is that we will save the money that I'm spending to go to Bloomington, but it's not a savings because my budget for each year is way more than that. And at the time before when it wasn't feasible, the times it was discussed before required building a building or remodeling some space that the county had. Now we are building the new building, but we're failing to put the autopsy suite in there. So it's almost like we're contradicting ourselves a little bit, or myself, on that, because we spent the money and agreed to spend the money to build a new building, but we didn't put the autopsy sink in there. So that's the only comment I would have about that.
Mr. J.
My only response, Dwayne, was if that's what we were going to do, we should have set it up front when we were doing the building.
Mr. Rosales.
Now you set yourself up for another question. So if there's a $22,000 or $25,000 savings on an annual basis, that means if we do get the sink, we're going to be saving about $25,000 a year. What will you do with that additional funds?
In theory, yes. I won't. That's in my budget now, and I budget for that every year based on that. And in theory, that'll be a savings to the county. I mean, yeah.
You take it out of the budget.
Yeah, it'll be gone. I'm sure you can find another use for it.
I'm pretty sure Carol probably will, right?
Ms. Anderson.
I guess hindsight is always better. If we had thought about it probably would have been, but I totally support. And I think the other thing that you didn't mention was that we did get the letter from the sheriff too, indicating that there are times that his employees have to make the trip, and I'm not sure how that always
gets
decided.
I had a letter from the Urbana Police Chief and Sheriff Walsh, and I personally spoke to Deputy Chief Daniels from Champaign PD. I spoke to Steve Ziegler from the State's Attorney's Office. All our police departments and State's Attorney's Office are in favor of this because it also saves them time and expense in attending the autopsies as well. And they even mentioned to me sometimes they don't attend certain autopsies because they can't get anybody free to go to Bloomington, whereas they could get somebody here a lot easier.
Mr. Mosher.
Everybody from Eldon Quick on that's held the coroner jobs asked for a morgue and a capability of doing these things.
Mr. Quisenberry.
Call the question.
Right. Is there... Thank you, Dwayne.
Yes, thank you.
Are we ready to vote, everyone? Does anyone want a roll call?
Roll call.
Okay, we call the roll.
Alex.
Yep.
Ammons.
Yes.
Anderson.
Yes.
Benzel.
Yes.
Berkson.
Yes.
Betts.
Yes.
Holderfield.
Yes.
James.
Yes.
Jay.
No.
Kurtz.
Yes.
Langenheim.
Yes.
McGinty.
Yes.
Michaels.
Yes.
Mosier.
Yes.
Nudo.
He has to abstain.
O'Connor.
Yes.
Petrie.
Yes.
Quisenberry.
Yes.
Richards.
Yes.
Rosales.
Yes.
Sapp.
Yes.
Schrader.
Yes.
Weibel.
I do believe the motion is carried.
Thank you.
I don't have a report. Oh, yeah. Now that we can have left this little controversy, we can go to the next one. I've asked Mr. Reinhardt to talk a little bit about the courthouse and the fleur-de-lis that was affected. Go ahead.
Obviously, sometime during the night of Sunday or Monday morning, the top half of the spire on the courthouse broke and was laying on the roof up there, tied up by the lightning rod cable holding it up there. We were able to get both pieces removed down safely. There was not any other further damage to the roof that we're aware of. We did not lose any other lightning protection. We did not lose any of the copper roof sheeting. All the light fixtures are still intact, so we were very lucky in that case. We have taken this fire to our Gill building, and we've had our insurance company, our roofing contractor who installed it, and an independent structural engineer requested by our insurance adjuster has looked at it, photographed it. We're checking it out now, and my official response, according to the insurance company now at this meeting, is the failure is under investigation now. What caused it?
Mr. Langenheim.
I have an official asking whether this was a design failure or a maintenance failure.
That is what we're investigating.
That's what I told him.
Mr. Richards.
I asked the question.
How long has that thing even been up there intact?
Approximately 2 years, but approximately. We have a 2-year warranty on a roofing system, and that started in 2010. So we're still under warranty for the roofing system. Now, whether that's applicable or not, that decision will be determined.
Other questions? Patsy.
I trust you will come to the board when you have a final verdict on this. I just couldn't believe this happened. I look at Ben Franklin sitting on top of the Philadelphia Capitol building for centuries, and he's still up there.
Mr. Kurtz.
May I go back to the autopsy room for half a second for a technical question, please? Al, the 9-foot sink, do you know the dimensions on that? Will that get through the door? When I own the restaurant, we have a similar kind of a sink. It's a 3-tier, 9-foot stainless steel tank. It's very big, very wide. Do you have the dimensions on that sink to make sure that it goes through those doors?
I do have a PDF of a cut sheet that Duane provided. I will take a good look at that. There are double doors leading into that particular area, and even though it's 9 feet long, it can be turned on side, I'm sure.
Okay. Now we're going to go back to the subject at hand, which is the little fleur-de-lis, for lack of a better word. Any other questions concerning that? I have one question. Do you have a rough estimate of cost to replace or reinstall?
I do not have a rough cost to reinstall. I can tell you that the original one cost approximately $13,000, and it cost about $1,000 a day for one of those large cranes to sit there. So the number should be somewhere in the upper 20,000s.
Is there something else? Mr. O'Connor.
It's not cast in stone that we would pay any of this, though, right? It could be covered under warranties and insurance.
Well, your insurance is self-funded, so you're going to pay at least the deductible, but yeah.
The deductible. Their deductible is $5,000. Mr. Reinhardt, if
without the little topper there, does it leave the courthouse any structural problem with the rest of it if that's simply not there?
No, it does not. That was strictly an ornamental weatherproof cap, ornamental design, weatherproof cap for the roofing system. Mm-hmm. Well, the structure is still intact, and when we took the broken pieces down, we put a temporary rubber roof on the cap to weather tight. So the roof itself is now in good shape.
Okay. Any other questions from folks? I presume. Oh, Mr. O'Connor, follow up.
I wonder if anyone's prepared to ask Jack Richmond if he wants a rubber cap on his courthouse crown.
Maybe he can donate a little more. I presume you'll update us as soon as you have some information.
Yes, I will.
Okay. Other business? Justice.
Wait.
Excuse me.
Is it, man?
Yeah. I thought it was Justice. Ms. Alice needed to be something.
Get her out for that.
Okay, the only thing we have on the agenda this month for Justice and Social Services are the monthly reports. I swear to you, next month we will have more people coming through giving reports. I don't think anybody's too distraught tonight that we don't have any extra reports.
Well, I'll make a motion to accept the reports and place them on file.
That's said. Is it? So that's nominibus for all of them. A second. Okay. Well, let me just quickly go through them quickly before we get out of here. With court services, the range on inmates at JDC was a little high this month. There were several days over 24. Animal control, we did 1,205 total tags. Brought in $70,000 in payments. Almost all of that was from Champaign. Impounded 72 dogs and 22 cats. Euthanized 41 of those. Public defender did close more cases than it opened this month. Opened 154 felonies, 103 misdemeanors, 250 traffic, 555 total. Closed 671. And we do have reports from emergency management this month for February and March. February's report is mainly concerning the snow emergency at the beginning of February, and the emergency operations center for the county was open for that. And the March report is talking about exercise planning and participation on responding to shootings. They also had a healthcare exercise, and since the first week in March was severe weather preparedness week in Illinois, they had their annual storm spotter training for the beginning of tornado season, and they trained 88 spotters. Are there any other comments on these reports, Mr. Rosales?
I recall some time back that we charged, I believe, the city of Urbana and Champaign for euthanizing animals, and you indicated that we euthanized 46. The city's paying any of that, because I believe that the city of Champaign was no longer going to cover those fees. I'm not sure if I'm correct or not, but I believe that there was some conversation regarding the payment of these cities towards euthanizing animals by the county.
I can't speak to specifically for the euthanizations, but we are getting payments from the $70,000 is almost completely from Champaign and Urbana, a little bit from St. Joseph, a little bit from Savoy. If anybody knows if we're paying specifically for euthanizing.
The cities have specific contracts with the county for the services that they pay for. I'm sorry, I don't know off the top of my head whether euthanization is in there or not, but impound services is contractual relationship between the county and the cities and villages.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions on these reports? Okay, all in favor of receiving these and placing them on file?
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Is there any other business for Justice and Social Services? I guess I'll go ahead and jump in. The jury commission met last month. The things that they're working on currently are preparing for jury awareness week. That's going to be the first week in May. And they're also working on ways to, as they've been, trying to increase the rate of participation when they send out surveys. And they're going to change the envelopes to try to make people pay more attention to them. And the court system is going to find a way to send out a follow-up letter to people who didn't send it in because we have such low rates. Hopefully that will increase it about 10%. Mr. Schrader?
Mr. Chair, are there still PSAs running about where awareness like there were? I don't know. I guess it's been a while. A few months ago it stopped.
Don't think that the PSAs are currently running. We talked about running more PSAs. And the rate is not nearly what the committee or Mr. Holland or Judge DePontis wants it at for participation with the jury surveys. So I'm sure that's something that's going to be wrapped up in that. And there's going to be a lot. We're trying to have a lot of publicity for jury participation week. We're going to do something at the beginning of May at the U of I Law School. And we have our esteemed former member, Ms. Putman, working on getting resolutions for that through the Urbana and Champaign City Councils.
Thank you. Probably the county board meeting.
Oh, yeah, and the county as well. Ms. Petrie?
Just a point of information. I'm not sure which committee this falls under. I was assuming it would be social justice, and that has to do with the upcoming renewal of the contract with the consultant at the nursing home. Does that fall under your domain?
That is no longer under justice.
It will be under finance, and it's on the finance agenda next week. Well, the repayment of the loan is on the finance agenda next week. I believe the MPA contract renewal is expected to be on the May finance agenda. The nursing home board is dealing with that at their meeting next week. Thank you very much.
Any other business under other business? Okay, I don't see any. We have no action for the full board. That's it for justice.
So just one last comment. For the SA update committee, we need one Democrat and one Republican county board member. For the site assessment update committee, which we voted on, I think, last month. We'll appoint those people at the next meeting on Tuesday, so I need a Democrat and a Republican kind of members to be willing to do that. And if you could just email me, I'd appreciate it. All right, thank you. Any other business? We're adjourned.